Welcome to the Focus TV.
They're looking like the message we've become accustomed to seeing over the years. Right now they're up 56-23 at the half over the Sparks. We can talk about Dead Eye having 18-4, Mahisha High Island having 14-2. But it's their defense that's winning this game, man. Their defense has been ferocious, especially inside. Dead Eye letting the Sparks get anything. They tripled that Ogumake. They're not Ogumake, excuse me. I don't want them to get confused with a sister. I don't think they understand that the Sparks, it seems like they're struggling to understand that she has to miss protection. Somebody else needs to step up. It started off hot in the first quarter. They had the Sparks to 26% shooting from the field. While the missing shot, 55% from the field, 75% 3-point range. And Valadon had 11-3 in that quarter. So that kind of tells you the start. They led 28-11. In the second quarter, they kind of made a run, but then the misses regrouped. And it was Maisha Hanon's turn. She went to work. She finished, like I said, with 14 points and 6 or 8 shooting from the field. But her defense on the page, you know, finding her, transition, keeping the body on her boards has been outstanding, man. And without her defense on the Gorman K, this could easily be a different game. But they're taking the head away from Tucker. No one has stepped up yet. And meanwhile, we all know you got the Mets have two all-world defenders on the perimeter getting it done. Deladon, as great as she is offensively, she don't get enough credit for how solid she is. She's always in the right spot. She always plays tough. She's fundamentally sound. She makes up for not having the best athleticism. So, but she's always in the right spot, making the right reads, man. That's why it's just hard for them to make the run. And just to kind of put this in perspective, right now the Sparks have 7 turnovers. They have more turnovers than they do assists on the side. It's just been exactly. I don't think Tavon could be salty about the first half at all. I think he's overly joyful. And I think all he worried about is continuing it for the next 2 quarters. You know, obviously in the 4-game losing streak, they've had issues with closing the game out. But the way they're playing right now, I don't see it happening. But you know, hopefully they finish the game. But all in all, man, excellent first half, man. Messi's getting it done.
Yeah, I had more questions planned, but the score is the score. You enjoy the second half. We're going to have Mr. Dalton later this evening. We're all going to have you stick with us for Mr. Dalton. So we look forward to talking with you then. Like you said, you already answered that. We're all worried about the third team. They're going to come out and take care of you. If they do, they're going to run. You're playing with 30. You almost have 30, right? Just take care of business. You know what I'm saying? And I'd save you, Ray. I didn't expect to have the halftime score to be that, but you know,
it is what it is.
You know, Ray, we've been sitting there watching them go through it. What do you, you know, just you guys' quick thoughts on the halftime score of what Cardell said about the first half? We already know the importance of keeping up within the second half, but just want to get you guys' quick take before we move on.
Yeah, the defense, man, like, and for the first time, they're getting it done at high level on both sides of the floor. You know, like the last couple games, you know, they've been in it defensively, but the offense has been lagging. But when you're clicking on both ends like that, it's hard for the other team because, you know, while, you know, in games past, they've been really strapping defensively. You know, they couldn't throw a rock in the ocean on the other end. You know, and that is not as deflating, you know, when you get a stop and then you come right back on the other end, you know, and you match that futility. you know, the other team just doesn't really feel it as much. But when you get a stop and it turns into quick points and it just keeps snowballing in, man, that's how you get 56-23 at halftime, you know, and they're not letting up. They're keeping the foot on the gas. You know, I'm sure they're amped up for having Elena back. They're at home, you know, in the midst of a long home stand. Just everything's clicking for them right now. And you know, it's good to see, man. They're playing a perfect basketball game, and Sparks just ran into a bus. So it's nothing they can do about it. It just is what it is at this point, man. Like, you know, you don't give up, but they know what's happening right now. The best they can do is just try to make it respectable, to be honest. You muted.
Appreciate it. Hadn't done in a while. Might as well pick right back up, right? the first couple of minutes going to be really pivotal in the second half. You know, Nek is still on her get back tour, where we all know the reasons is the why. You know, but again, Washington, there's no reason for you, you know, like Cardell said, no one wants to jinx it. You take care of business. You focus on the next home game. You got it. It's uphill. You got an uphill climb. You literally, as cliche, as corny as it may be, it's one game at a time. Like, Tavian, I heard you mention, like, it's about time almost. I think it's something to that effect, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's literally due time for them. You know, with the four-game losing streak they're coming off of and getting the Elena back, they're getting back in the swing of things. And, you know, the last couple of defeats were a little bit of, not concerning, this is word I'm trying to look for. They were a little bit disheartening because a lot of those games they were in, and they definitely should have been able to pull some of them out. So I feel like, again, this is a statement for them, you know, coming back, you know, off of the four-game losing streak, and to come out and perform like this, it just gives you more of, you know, information to know, like, this is the team that we should be expecting to see day in and day out. You know, I think it'll get better. You know, I feel like the more comfortable Deladon gets, you know, for her playing in her first game back since 2019, the back injuries, the COVID season, everything that she's gone through, we still know she's an MVP, you know, and then, of course, the MVP caliber season Tina's having, it's just, it should work out, you know. So I'm glad to see them, you know, whooping up with somebody, because their last couple of games were just so close, you know, where they should have been able to pull it out. And the games against the Aces kill me every time. Like, every time I watch it, I just be like, oh, you're so close. You should have been there. I'm glad to see them doing this. You know, I'm hoping it's going to continue. And like you said, they're going to have it's going to be a tough battle for them, you know, to try to get in the playoff race. But it's not out of the question, but they definitely just have to take it one game at a time.
Yeah, and, you know, we know across, we've all watched enough sports here. Again, corny and cliche, but anytime someone gets one of their leaders back or their lead dog back, like, there's a little bit more juice around the team as a whole. We all know that. Let's head into your division, man. We're getting closer and closer to the end of this preseason. I was looking at some of them scores while trying to get some stuff ready for your segment. And then, one score specifically spit out. But the first one.
We'll talk about that score. But I want to start off with the only team that won this week in the division and give them their props this week. The Washington football team was your only team that won this week. Last week, nobody won. So the Washington football team got their first win in the preseason this year. They played the Bengals. They beat the Bengals 17-13. Fitzpatrick was 7-13, 96 yards. Tyler Heinicke, 11-13, 80 yards and 4 carries for 26 yards. And Kyle Allen was 2-4 for 23 yards. Patterson, 16 carries, 71 yards, 1 touchdown, 3 receptions for 25 yards. Antonio Gibson, 7 carries for 28 yards. Antonio Gandy-Golden had 3 receptions for 28 yards. And Diami Brown had 2 receptions for 33 yards. And last but not least, Logan Thomas, 1 reception for 28 yards. I think that the Washington football team is liking Patterson. I think he has a really, really great chance of making the team if he has not already. We know they're getting ready to come to the cut down portion when they go, I believe, to like 80 people on the roster. So that's coming up. But he's making a great showing for himself. He's an undrafted free agent from Buffalo. You know, he ran for 71 yards, caught 3 passes for 25 yards, and had a 37-yard kickoff return. So he's been a workhorse for them. You know, I love to see players, you know, undrafted, especially in preseason, because we didn't have preseason last year. So a lot of players really didn't get to show, you know, what they're able to do if you weren't already a solidified player. So it's nice to see these players be able to get an opportunity and go out there and perform. One other good spot for them as well, Dustin Hopkins seems to have returned to form. Week one in preseason, he was struggling from kicking field goals, but this week he definitely did a whole lot better when he had 3 field goals for Washington, and he was able to get them on the board. On the defensive side, we know how special they're going to be on defense. But also Landon Collins, who coming off of an Achilles injury from last year, he looks faster, he looks stronger. So I expect big things from him for this year as well. But all in all, Heineken, however you want to say his name, he has had a good showing as well. He will no doubtly be the backup to Fitzpatrick. But he's definitely making it probably a little bit tougher for Ron, but I'm sure Ron is already geared in and pretty sure Fitz is going to be the starter. I don't know if it's been officially named. As we know, there are so many quarterbacks who have not been named starters yet, which is crazy to me, and it's across the league for some odd reason. But it's been a good season for them, so you know they have one more preseason game coming up, and we'll be able to talk about that next week. I'll go ahead and get into the stinker that happened. It was a horrible showing. You already knew before I even said anything. Exactly. The Philadelphia Eagles played the Patriots, and they lost 35-0. Joe Flacco was 10 of 17, 83 yards, 1 interception, and 2 carries for -1 yards and 1 fumble loss. Nick Mullins was 5 of 10, 27 yards, and 1 interception. Elijah Holyfield had 4 carries for 31 yards. Kenneth Gainwell, 5 carries for 21 yards and 3 receptions for 23 yards. Miles Sanders, 2 carries for 13 yards. Zeke Stoll had 4 receptions for 33 yards. Devontae Smith, first preseason action, 2 receptions for 19 yards. And Richard Rodgers had 2 receptions for 16 yards. So the storyline in this one was that it was Devontae Smith's first time playing the preseason coming off of MCL sprain. And everybody was excited, at least that's the talk. I was excited to see Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith finally get to play together. Jalen Smith had his uniform on, had his pads on, had his helmets on, was dancing on the field, and next thing you know, he was a scratch. Apparently he had an illness not related to COVID-19, had some type of stomach issue, abdominal pains, where he did check into the hospital, but he has since been released. Don't know what it was. Majority of the starters for the Eagles did not play this week. Outside of Smith, Sanders did not play in week one, but he got a couple of carries in week two. We didn't really see much from Quez. We didn't see much from Jalen. Serrani is basically talking about that since they had the joint practice this week with the Patriots, there were a lot of 7-on-7, 11-on-11. There were pretty much mini games happening all week long, so a lot of the starters got a lot of rest. But at the end of the day, there's still no excuse for a 35-0 whooping on national TV. It was embarrassing, and I'm sure that there are so many things that have to go back to the board. There were still some injuries. Kayvon Wallace, who has been struggling with the groin injury, was able to play, but he injured his groin again, so it's going to be tough to see if he's able to then compete for a starting position as well. Also, tight end Jason Kroon was carted off the field with a knee injury. He was in the running for tight end. Also, Tyree Jackson, who was the former quarterback turned tight end, he's also with some injuries. So tight end room is getting a little bit smaller. But, of course, the starters are Zach Ertz. We have, of course, Dallas Goedert. Richard Rodgers was there in a pinch for them last year. He's going to have to be big for them as well. And Stoll as well, who took majority of the snaps at the tight end position for this game. But it was just a thrashing. The defense just, without Brandon Graham, Fletcher Cox didn't play, Jason Hargrave, Derek Barnett, Josh Sweat, and others, just they were just demolished everywhere. Like the Patriots just ran all up and through, pretty much did whatever they wanted. Only, like I said, bright side is just the fact that there weren't any starters really playing. On the other side, Alex Singleton, again, who's gone from practice squad, undrafted, you know, getting kicked off teams, trying to get back on, to now being a solidified player. He was all over the field, so he's looking like he's going to have another great year. But And then also what I found out, Kenneth Gainwell is also Fletcher Cox's cousin, which is crazy. Didn't know that. But I like Kenneth Gainwell. I think he has a great chance to make the team. I would think that they're going to have four running backs on the squad, maybe a potential of one or two on the practice squad. I would see, of course, Miles Sanders, Howard, probably Boston Scott, and then it's going to be between Gainwell or Elijah Holyfield. So still keeping their options open. Again, we're kind of coming down to cut down to the 80 people on the roster. Hopefully Nick Mullins gets cut, but I don't know what will happen with that. I hope they take him back somewhere soon. Like, at this point, give me Nate Sudfeld back. Like, no, I don't want him either. But either way. Next game, we had the Giants who played against the Browns. The Giants lost to the Browns 17-13. Brian Lerucki, sorry if I pronounced your last name wrong, was 11 of 19, 108 yards, one touchdown, one interception, and three carries for 27 yards. Mike Glennon was 10 of 13, 86 yards. Corey Kemet, 9 carries for 30 yards. Devontae Booker, 6 carries for 27 yards and 1 touchdown. Bryson John had 3 receptions for 58 yards. David Sills, the 5th, 3 receptions, 31 yards and 1 touchdown. And Dante Pettis, 3 receptions, 25 yards and 1 carry for 4 yards. Again, there was a lot of heavy usage of running backs in this game, which kind of indicates that Saquon is probably going to start, you know, maybe getting some more work the closer and closer we get to the third and final preseason game. One thing that's crazy to me is because there's only 3 preseason games this year, you don't really know how people are going to go. A lot of times in the fourth game in the preseason, it's usually nobody plays. Everybody got their work in third or second game. But now since there's only 3, you know, you see a lot of teams holding out, and maybe they'll give their starters, you know, extended time, you know, in the final game because they're so much closer to the start. Who knows at this point? But that's definitely something that the Giants have been going through. Of course, they haven't been playing a lot of their starters. They're very, very, very cautious about Saquon. Kyle Rudolph still looking like he's not close enough to get started as well. So a lot of running, you know, Corey Clement, who came off of a fumble last week, had a very better showing this week. He is a Super Bowl winning champion with my team. So he knows what he needs to do to be able to get a position in the starting rotation, you know, backup, whatever position. Because, of course, if Saquon's healthy, he's number one. Daniel Jones, again, did not play. So it was Mike Glennon and Brian Lucre with the quarterback duties this week. Glennon played the first half. Lucre played in the second half. Both of them led their teams on good drives and scores. But obviously, they just weren't able to get it done at the end. The Browns, who will be a talented team this year, watching SportsCenter so much, you know, just seeing them talk about ESPN and just seeing them talk about how they really think the Browns are going to go to the championship this year. So it's very, very interesting to see what happens on that front as well. But then I think a good bright spot for the Giants as well is David Sills the 5th. He's been playing really, 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 really good in his time that he's getting in preseason. So I look to him to have an impact in the wide receiver room as they go forward. But, again, I can't wait to see Daniel Jones because we haven't seen him at all this preseason. So I'm anxious to see if they're going to put him in the third preseason game, trying to get him some game reps to see what's going to happen. We know last year he tripped over his feet. He ended up on the bottom of a pile earlier this year in practice. So I want to see him actually play football again. So hopefully we get to see a peek of him in their final preseason game. And last but not least, Cowboys played the Texans, and the Cowboys lost to the Texans. Texans had 20, Cowboys 14. Ben DiNucci was 4 of 19, 120 yards, 3 interceptions, 2 carries for 10 yards. Cooper Rush was 10 of 12, 97 yards for 2 touchdowns. Gilbert, 3 of 5, 30 yards, and 1 fumble loss. Rico Dowdle, 6 carries, 31 yards. Tony Pollard had 5 carries for 20 yards. Davis had 2 carries for 11 yards. Noah Brown, 3 receptions for 35 yards. Osiris Mitchell, 2 receptions for 31 yards. Cedric Wilson, 3 receptions, 22 yards and 1 touchdown. Again, no Dak. And it appears that there's still some competition as far as who's going to be the backup quarterback. Again, we had DiNucci, you had Gilbert, and you had Rush. And we know that Rush was the backup for most of the season last year. Well, not last year, but in 2017 before Andy Dalton came and became the solidified backup. And now we know that Andy Dalton is in Chicago. So there's still some rumblings of who would actually be, you know, that backup quarterback for them. We know that Dak is still coming off of the ankle injury, and we know that he's coming off of now this shoulder injury that, you know, initially they thought was day-to-day, week-to-week, and we still have not seen Dak in a preseason game. We haven't seen him in any type of full-contact football since the injury, so I'll be interested to see if he's going to be good enough to go next week in the preseason, because I feel like he needs to at least get some type of reps. He needs to kind of get back into, you know, I'm sure he's doing stuff in practice, things that we can't see, but I'm sure they really want that game time speed with his speedy, amazing wide receiving core. I think the Dallas Cowboys have probably the best wide receiving core in the league, you know, with CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, even, you know, the ones that are showing up now, Cedric Wilson, you still got Michael Gallup. They have a lot of good, and then, of course, their tight ends. So it still leaves a lot desirable, you know, for me to find out what's going on with them. I feel like them telling me if Dak is going to be 100% and ready to go is going to be a good thing for them. Also, we didn't really get to see a lot of work for Ezekiel. We know he's gotten in a better shape. You know, he's put, you know, trying to protect the ball more. That's his focus this year. But it's, for me, it's still hard to know until I actually see him out there with the big boys. So I'm interested to see if he's going to get any work this upcoming preseason game as well. But it was nice to see that the entire Dallas starting offensive line played for the first time together this preseason. Well, Tyron Smith, Zach Martin, all of them, of course, coming off of injuries at one point or another. But it's nice to see them all out there. That is, I think, was another big reason why Dallas struggled as far as with the rushing game, because it's hard to run when you don't have a really good offensive line. So if their offensive line is back 100% healthy and they're able to open the gaps for the running backs, it could be another good season for their running backs. You know, we know Tony Pollard is good out there as well. So, again, it's just preseason. None of these games count. Doesn't matter how much you win by, how much you lose by. It all comes down to the Cowboys opening game on Thursday night when that comes up. So, I'm just excited for one more preseason game to be over and done with and the season to be here.
You are not the only one.
And that's the other thing I was talking about, is that there are so many different organizations that have not
named
the starter.
Yeah.
I'll save it.
Trust me, it's one of, I had to get rapid fire today. You know, that was one of my first things. Like, a whole bunch of y'all saying, a whole bunch of not saying nothing at the same time. I'm going to get into this. I'll tell you when I feel like it.
Basically. Come on, man. My coach is the number one in that aspect. I don't know what he's thinking.
Nice, nice try. Come on, man. Just say what it is. It's fine. But we're going to toss this over to Keith for a second. Pac-12 segment. This week's going to take a look at quarterbacks and running backs. Thought by our first break when we get back from that. Ray's going to talk to you about Deladon's debut because he was in the building for it.
I'm Keith Archer here back again. Today we are covering Pac-12 quarterbacks and running backs. Like I have previously said, I am a student at Arizona State University studying sports journalism, and let's get right into it. The first quarterback we will be covering today is Keaton Slovis, a quarterback out of USC, who in 2019 threw for 3,500 passing yards, 30 touchdowns, and only 9 interceptions, which is a really good touchdown to interception ratio, especially in college. Like I have mentioned previously, Slovis is a very impressive quarterback who is up there when it comes to Spencer Rattler and Sam Howell at UNC. Those three quarterbacks are viewed as like tier one, and he is a sleeper pick at the number one NFL pick, be due to the fact that he is extremely accurate, and accuracy, although it's been kind of, now I don't want to say lost art, but it hasn't been focused on as much with mobility coming into play more, but his accuracy is really what shines when it comes to him. He had nearly 2,000 passing yards during this past season. Everybody knows we had COVID go down, so there was a lot of things that players weren't able to do, and they weren't able to warm up how they usually are. So for him to near 2,000 passing yards is pretty impressive. Next is UCLA's quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson. He offers rushing upside, and like I just spoke about a few seconds ago, mobility is pretty, it's starting to become, I don't want to say a necessity, but almost that when it comes to NFL scouts. He had three games over 50 rushing yards, including one with 100 rushing yards. So he does offer his rushing upside. And even though his arm isn't too great, he still had a 12 touchdown and 4 interception year, which is pretty good considering he had 7 touchdowns and 4 interceptions his freshman year. So he's obviously improving, and that's what you want to see with such a young guy in Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Next, we're going to go to Jaden Daniels, my guy at ASU. He neared 3,000 passing yards in 2019 with a 17-2 touchdown to interception ratio, which is really impressive. Like I said, like I spoke about, he has rushing upside. And when you look at his build, he has kind of a Cam Newton, Josh Allen kind of build. His arm might not be the same, but he definitely is a stronger, taller, lengthier guy when it comes to the quarterback position. He had 3 rushing touchdowns in 2019 and 4 rushing touchdowns in 2020. So obviously he's improving. He actually led his team to a 70-7 win against the University of Arizona. So he, when playing your rival, rival games are always big. And to see him perform like that against his rival is extremely impressive. Dylan Morris out of Washington, he was 3-1 this past season. His highest game came with 272 passing yards against Utah. He had one game with 3 interceptions, so obviously he's looking to bounce back from that. But like I said a few minutes ago, this past season was like no other. So I'm going to give him, you know, some leeway when it comes to having a bounce back season, because it isn't always easy to play when, you know, you have a mask on, especially a mask on your helmet, and you weren't able to go to preseason and camp and things like that. So he definitely is looking to jump back and get in the forefront of his career and hope to improve light years of where he was last year. Last, we're going to talk about Jaden DeLora out of Washington State. He was 1-3 as a starter, and he had one game over 300 passing yards, and he had a 2 touchdown game. Which, although, you know, when you look at quarterbacks like Slavis, Daniels, and Thompson, who are providing higher games with rushing upside and passing upside, DeLora is looking to provide more passing touchdowns, 3-4 touchdown games, and include more than just one 300 passing yard game, maybe even touch 400 passing yards, which, although it's easier said than done, nonetheless, is pretty impressive that he had a 300 passing yard game, and he only had 4 games. So one of the 4 games, he provided good upside. Now we're going to switch to the running back side of things, and we're going to go to Colorado's Jarek Broussard, who neared 1,000 rushing yards with 5 rushing touchdowns and 0 fumbles. 0 fumbles is one of the most important things that I want to focus on when it comes to Broussard, because, you know, when you run the ball a lot, it's easy to get it poked out once or twice. And you have guys like Ezekiel Elliott, for example, who throughout his career had showed no signs of fumbling and had 5-6 fumbles this past season, showing the decline of his career. So when it comes to fumbling at the running back position, he's shown that he can take care of that ball. He had 3 games over 100 rushing yards, including a game with 300 rushing yards, which any football fan can tell you that is pretty impressive, and you don't hear a running back doing that quite often. Now we're going to switch to C.J. Verdell, Oregon's running back. He's an explosive back, but he does come with injury concerns. He is questionable at the moment. I do wish the best for him and hoping that he bounces back this year. He had 2 games over 100 rushing yards last season, so obviously he provides good rushing upside when he is on the field. So hopefully he manages to get back on the field full time and can make his best shot at the NFL. Lastly, we're going to go to Rashad White, another Arizona State player who had 500 yards from scrimmage, 2 games over 100 yards, multiple touchdown games, including one with 3 and one with 2 touchdowns. And like I said about Broussard, when he had his fumbling, he had the fumbling, not problems, but he had the fumbling things. And Rashad White providing multiple touchdown games is pretty impressive due to the fact that even though one of the games came against Arizona where they blew them out 70-7, he can provide that, you know, running backs, they're nonstop getting playing time, nonstop, nonstop, nonstop. And with him being able to provide longevity in the, during the game and not being able to, you know, when he gets banged up, go out and stay out, he comes back in and he keeps going. So that shows a lot for him and how he goes along during the game. He had two receiving games with 50 yards, which is really impressive because you look at the NFL and look at Derrick Henry, for example. Although he's putting up 2,000 rushing yard seasons, his lack of receiving upside, is what discounts him from being the top or being in those late game situations where you have to pass. And then you got Saquon Barkley, CMC, you got these guys, and Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, who all provide receiving upside. So obviously receiving upside at the running back position is increasingly important, such as for the quarterback position, accuracy and mobility are increasingly important.
Welcome back to the Focus TV. Shout out to Keith for knocking out the second segment. Pac-12 will be fun. One of the teams I root for, they got a nice little pipeline out of ASU over there with Herm. Send us more players, if you don't mind. Not to anyone else in the division, just us. That said, all right, Ray, you were in the building on Sunday for Landon Dollar Don's debut. If you just want to share some thoughts from that.
Yeah, man, it was great. It was, you know, a lot of energy in the building, as to be expected. You know, when she was announced for the starting lineup, that was the loudest that building has been all year. You know, she started off, I mean, looked like she was just trying to feel her way around. You know, it's first time being back on the professional court in 2 years. You know, it's going to be some ring rust. You know, you're going to have to kind of get your bearings. And, you know, she didn't force it. You know, she just eased her way into the game. But you could tell as the game went on, she was becoming increasingly more comfortable. And, you know, in the second half, she kind of got loose. You know, she, you know, just was doing Elena things, you know, and then she kind of picked up right where she left off tonight. It was good to see her out there, man. Cause, I think I speak for all the Mystics fans. We missed her being out there, you know, miss seeing her in the jersey, you know, not only for, for what she's able to do on the floor, but, you know, just being a spark for the team. And, you know, it definitely seemed like they had a little extra pep in their step to start the game. You know, before they made their first sub, they went on an 11-2 run, you know, and this is against the defending champs. They were a little juiced up, you know, and for good reason, man. I'm sure they're happy to have her back. You know, just another veteran player with that level of skill that they can put, you know, next to Tina and the other people they already have. You know, just kind of takes pressure off the other players. You know, Coach Tebow was saying this year they acquired a lot of people that were just expected to have, you know, just kind of not limited roles, but, you know, were expected, brought in to do a specific thing, but, you know, due to necessity, they've had to expand their roles. And, you know, they've responded to that. You know, it's been some bumps, which, you know, you can't fault them for. But yeah, man, they're just starting to be whole as a team. And, you know, today they announced that Emma wasn't coming back. You know, she's getting some much-deserved rest. But so now they kind of know what they're going to look like moving forward. Of course, barring the injuries, hopefully we don't have to deal with that anymore, you know, for the remainder of the season. But I mean, they're handling business tonight, you know, and then they got Dallas on back-to-back games Thursday and Saturday. So they can really put themselves in a good position come week's end in regards to the playoffs. You know, Dallas and LA are the two teams in front of them right now. So yeah, man, they can do themselves a whole lot of favors, but yeah, man, it was definitely great to see Elena back out there. You know, she looks like she still knows how to play basketball. So yeah, man, I'm just excited to see her, you know, just kind of get people back into the swing of things, get her sea legs under. You know, I think the more time she has on the floor, it's going to get increasingly more difficult for opposing teams. So yeah, man, shout out to her and just glad to have her back.
Yeah, you speak for yourself. Just as a WNBA as a whole, it's always good when top players get back. You know, we had Stewie out for some time. Several other notable players in the past few years. I'm so happy that she's back. Washington is also happy that she's back. But a real quick update from DC United. Like I told you guys last week, you know, they had just finished the first leg of a 3-game week. So look, man, things did not get better for the Black and Red last week after I talked to you. They fell to New England on the road 3-2 on Saturday. Atlanta United came into Audi and beat them 2-1. Despite heavily outshooting Atlanta United, I'm talking about they put up 27 shots. DC United fell to the visitors 2-1. Joseph Martinez and Marcelino Marino scored for Atlanta. Yordi Reyna put the home side on the board with a spectacular free kick. It was definitely worth the watch. But, you know, Hernan Losada said after the game, it's kind of like, yeah, Yordi made a spectacular shot, but, you know, it'd be kind of cool if we kind of made some of the plain Jane opportunities too. Like, it's cool that he did something that might have went viral, but, you know, again, 26 other shots, you know, some of which, you know, 6 yards out type thing, just not finishing. As I said, several great chances. One that comes to mind, Ola Kamara, after a rebound off the corner, ball rolls out to him. You know, he's one of the top goal scorers in the league. 6 yards out, and just, I know he wanted that one back. Did not hit that ball right, and air mails it over the goal. A couple minutes later, you know, a youngster, Kevin Paredes, gets the ball in space, tries to cut back, put it on his favorite left foot. And I know he wanted that shot back too, because it just went straight to Brad Guzan. And shout out to Brad Guzan, because he was under fire. Like I said, 27 shots, 6 big saves, and every one of them saves, I'm talking like huge save. None of them, maybe one was pedestrian, so 5 out of 6 of them were needed. Again, Yordi Reyna, mentioned, had the one goal. He came in the second half and really gave life to DC. You know, DC had some issues dealing with Atlanta's counters in the first half. You know, one of the things DC United likes to do, they press high, which means everybody got to be on the stream, but be on the same page. When you step high, you got to step high together. You step back, you got to step back together. And they were getting countered in Atlanta, the type of talent they got offensively. You don't want to give people numbers. And, you know, they gave Atlanta numbers in the first half. Second half, they did a much better job. So Yordi evened it up at 1. And then Mr. Moreno, Marcelino Moreno, the guy who had a beautiful through ball, he had the assist for the first goal for Atlanta. And it was a dime to Joseph Martinez. Looked like it was all sides. It was just that perfect. And then this time, you know, he takes a shot through thick of the bodies. He told as a goal scorer off the youngster, if you can barely see the keeper, he can barely see you. So he placed the ball through a thick of the bodies to the far post. John Kempen, you could tell he didn't really have good sight lines on it. And then, you know, the keeper didn't even move. Ball goes to the far post, puts Atlanta up. And then, you know, DC had a couple more chances, but they just couldn't capitalize. Some positives. It was good seeing Junior Moreno and Russ Canales back in the middle of the park together. Russ has been out with some injuries. You know, they've been bit by the injury bug heavily this year. You guys have heard me talk about it extensively. The finishing has to get better. It's just the theme. Like, it is what it is. You're not getting any super high price forward to come through the door. You have who you have. The thing is, it'd be one thing if you were like, man, we need player X to finish these chances, because we only get 2 chances a game. Not, you're creating multiple chances. For the love of God, take your time and just finish. That's it. 27 shots means at least 20 opportunities were decent. You got to finish. That said, even with a bad week, 3-game losing streak after having a 5-game unbeaten streak, they're still above the line in 7th place. They'll have to string together some results similar to the Mystics, except they're above the line. Like, if the playoffs started today, they're good. The Mystics still got to get above the invisible line. But Atlanta, who just beat them, they're at 8th and they're tied in points. So, like, both teams have 27 points. Again, DC United will be hosting Philadelphia this weekend. Pivotal, you kind of want to take care of this one. You need the result. 1 point would be great, but you can't afford to take an L right now. They like DC United, also have a nice stretch of home games, you know, down the stretch of the regular season. Just got to take advantage of it, man. They both control their own destiny. And, you know, what better way could you have it? On to Jamal Hayward in the 9450 breakdown. This week, breaking down a sidestep to show you guys some different variations off it. Again, breaking down a sidestep. And then when we get back, you know, rapid fire and such. All right, welcome back to the Focus TV. Very special thanks again to Jamal Hayward. Back this week, the 9450 breakdown. All right, y'all, do my best with some of these questions. Octavia, I told you we're going to get some of this NFL stuff. You know, NBA giving us a little bit of a reprieve. So little heavy NFL, NBA, I'm sure, you know, not to be outdone. They'll probably be back next week in the new cycle with a bang. Why not, right? Sports. All right, so we're going to start with ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, who says that, quote, "There are a lot of people around the league that I speak to. They say this might be the year that everybody figures out Lamar Jackson," end quote. Wanted to get you guys' thoughts on this wonderful comment about a 24, 25-year-old former MVP already. So, Octavia, I guess we'll start with you, because Jeremy Fowler talked to some people who he can't share their names. So
that's what I was going to start with. I was like, who are said people? Who are these people you speak of? And what have they decided that they have figured out? Because even if you can figure out, can you stop it? Doesn't look like anybody's been able to do that yet. And I'm sure that, you know, even if somebody were to figure it out, that he would be able to adapt. You know, I think that they always just try to discredit him so much that it's crazy that they can't just give him his props for what he does. You know, he's an excellent quarterback. He's very mobile and he can throw accurately. You know, like, why can't he just be that? I just feel like they always have something to say. I loved his response. You know, I doubt it. I doubt it too. So I think me and Lamar are on the same page. Jeremy, like, I need you to tell me who your sources are. I need to fact check you and run this through, because I don't know who these people are. But even if they were, if these people said this, like, why would they tell you? Don't you think they would leave it to them, like, keep it to themselves? Like, we figured out Lamar. If you go tell Lamar, then maybe he's going to do something different. So I just don't understand. Again, you know, we always talk about it, clickbait. They just want to be, you know, seen and talked about, but I don't believe it.
Right.
Yeah, man, this is just where we are in sports journalism right now. Like, seems like every week somebody is running their mouth to some reporter. Like, who are you talking to, dog? Like, come on, man. And then, like Octavia said, like, I would think, you know, if you have the answer to a unsolvable question, you'd probably keep it to yourself, you know, so they don't try to do something different, some wrinkles in the offense, adjust, you know. But that's just me, you know, but what have you. So, you know, at the end of the season, if Lamar does what he's been doing since he's been in the league, then we got to go back to, what's the guy's name? Jeremy, right?
Jeremy Fowler. I'm gonna find him.
Yeah. Then we got to have a conversation, dog. Like, who lied to you?
What did they exactly tell you, sir?
Yeah. So I don't, whenever somebody says I've been talking to people or sources say, I just assume they just made it up.
I tell you, we talked about this a little earlier. What do you guys view on some NFL teams? Like, you got the Rams, like, not nobody that I'm paying money to is going to touch preseason field. Y'all can ball out. We're going to get all our work and joint practices. But come Sunday, y'all sit next to me. Sit up in a box. You can be on the sideline, away from people. I don't even want you to get rolled into. Street clothes for all of you. Then you got other teams who was like, nah, all y'all, all hands on deck. Every single one of you. Literally all of you. So, Ray, we'll start with you this time. Just your thoughts on, like, the different ways people are attacking it and knowing that there's one less game. What do you think of these decisions?
Yeah, I'm actually shocked that it's such polar opposites, you know, depending on the teams. Like, mm-hmm. Everybody's dealing with the same situation. And, I didn't think the removal of one preseason game would have this type of ripple effect. I just thought it would be, you know, business as usual. You know, it's honestly kind of weird to me. You know, I think you would want your guys to get some, at least a little bit of, you know, live action reps. Just do it as normal. Have them come in, play a few series just to kind of fill things out and get used to each other in a live game setting. So yeah, man, this is, I don't know. I mean, I don't get paid to make those decisions, so hopefully it works out for them. But if it were me, you know, of course I would be cautious, give them one or two series, you know, and then have that be that. But, you know, to just keep them away from it completely, that just defeats the purpose of preseason.
Yeah, I was laughing because I knew this the pay grade statement was coming. I know it was coming. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'll take you.
Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting to see how each team is handling it. I think that, you know, there's no quote unquote blueprint of what a 3 preseason game schedule looks like. You know, we all knew what the 4 preseason game schedule looked like. You know, don't really see in game 1. You may see him in game 3 full a couple of series, and usually game 4 is nobody, everybody's resting and everything. But I think it's crazy that they have not, that there are some starters who have not gotten any reps. So that's why I'm like so interested to see how this 3rd preseason game is going to go, especially for outside of, you know, the Cowboys and the Steelers, who technically did get 4 preseason games this year with the Hall of Fame game. Mm-hmm. You know, even some of them not still haven't touched the field, you know. Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, yeah, I know he is accident prone. We've seen that in the past umpteenth years, but he didn't play a lot last year, and he's not getting any faster. He's actually getting a little bit slower. So for him to not get any game time reps to me is crazy. You know, I get not having him out there for a full quarter. You don't really need to see what he can do because it's Ben Roethlisberger. You know what he's capable of doing. But I feel like he's got to get in some type of rhythm. There's a lot of new players. You know, he has a lot of new personnel to figure out. And I just think it's crazy that there are players, Daniel Jones, you know, yeah, he had a good second year, but, you know, we know how fast that can turn around. So for me, just to not have them play at all is crazy. Like, you can't hide from injuries. It's going to happen. You can even see the Jets are going through it as well. And I'm sure a lot of those players didn't see a whole lot of preseason action, but people are getting hurt in practice, training camps, at home, working out. It's going to happen. That's where you come into contact of making sure that you have a good team around you, your physical therapy people, everybody that's supposed to be watching these players. That's where that really comes in. If you think you're just going to hide them all preseason and not let them play, and then game 1 gets out there and they are gassed, they don't know what the plays are because they haven't been doing them at full speed. Yeah, they have these 7-on-7s and these 11-on-11s, but you're not punishing quarterbacks in those, and you're not running 100% every single time. I don't care what they say. You're not. It's not until the lights are on, the fans are in the stands again. You know, let's not talk about having to get used to that all over again, you know, and getting ready and knowing how to listen to the cadences and making sure that you're not jumping off sides every single time. You know, it's a lot that goes into these things. And the fact that some of these coaches just have not even, in my opinion, taken that into account is a little bit crazy. But I give everybody a little bit of grace just because, again, nobody really knows what a 3 preseason schedule looks like. So I feel like if the more this goes on, we'll kind of get more of a concrete, like how we did with the 4 games. Like, people will figure out what their blueprint is, and it'll kind of stick as it goes further. But I just don't think, like, no work at all in a preseason, like, that's crazy. And then you think I'm just going to hop out here on game 1 and be good. It don't really work like that.
We got New England, San Francisco, and Chicago. Why? What are they doing, man? Ray, we'll start with you. Just what are the coaches doing? So, I have a name to start. I think Bill's been kind of keeping it a buck. Like, you know, Cam's a starter. He's been consistent, but people don't want to believe it. That's a whole another story for another day. But the other two spots is like, nah, man. You know, just go let the vets do whatever. I know, you know, I got the drawing on my pad, and in my free time, I'm doodling plays for my new shiny toy. But, you know, we're going to roll the old dudes out there. Just, you know, old college try and such. Give them some time.
Look, if I'm a player and I see you pussyfooting around with this decision, that's an obvious decision to make, I'm going to get kind of annoyed. Like, honestly, I mean, and then if you make the wrong decision,
even more annoying.
Because I figure once you name a starter, you're going to give it about 3 games. You know what I'm saying? And you let them stink it up for three games and waste them weeks. Like, dude, that's how you lose the locker room. You know, just come on, man.
He said, don't even waste time, man. We know what it is.
I don't understand it. You know, like, I understand there are some legitimate competitions and there are some legitimate decisions that need to be made. Like, I can see the decision making in Denver. You know, is it going to be the new Drew Lock, or are you going to go with Teddy? I can see the certain circumstances. But my team, Jalen Hurts or Joe Flacco or Nick Mullins? Like, name the starter like we know it is and just continue on and go. I'm saying, now I do give Jacksonville slight grace just because of a lot of things they said last night watching the game made a lot of sense to me. That if y'all are going to suck this bad, I don't know what y'all going to let old Sunshine be out there and get knocked out every day. But at the end of the day, y'all drafted him because of this. So name him the starter. Keep it pushing. After the game last night, I don't think there should be any more conversation in New Orleans. It should be Jameis. Taysom is just not it for me. And I mean, he looked good, but we all know that Jameis can look good, but we know he sometimes likes to throw the ball away. So we understand that. But at the end of the day, make the decision. We're going into the final week of preseason, and we still have so many teams that have not even made the obvious decision. And like Ray said, like if I'm on that team and I'm like, come on, bro. Like we all know what it is, but for it to be said and done, move on. Everybody start to game plan 100% and officially of what we're going to be doing go back and forth instead of playing these games where, you know, we'll see how they do tomorrow. We got one more game. You never know. Like, make a decision. I honestly do not get it. I don't get it. Like, make the decision. Like I said, there are so many, like, point blank period, like, decisions that should have been made by now. And I'm specifically looking at Nick Sirianni because I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, let's put in Joe Flacco. He's going to give us the best chance to win. No. And, like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And then, I mean, even your team, like, you know, I'm thinking Trey already should be out there. But, you know, I ain't going to say too much.
I'm going to say this. I'm not paying.
Oh, and then Chicago. Not. That was the other one. Chicago. Yeah, like, bro, it's Justin Fields. Like, let it go.
Like, look, man. Like, Matt Nagy, let's keep it a buck, man. This is how you save your job, all right?
Come on.
Let's keep it a buck. You got hired. They had Mitchell. You ain't asked for that. That's not your fault, right? Cool. You get to this point. You finally got your guy. Bro, you not about to roll Andy out there. Don't waste your time. And the thing that's most insulting to me is when we look at the talent differential. That's why it's such a slap in the face. It's like, yeah, I know they're young, but even as young as they are, they can do things right now that you can't even dream of, sir. Sit down. There's nothing they can learn from you. Not one thing. Like, I died laughing. On Sunday, it was the perfect example why, like, if it was me, I was cool with Trey starting since draft day. But when Jimmy gets a series, he come out, throw the ball high. Trey come out and throw the ball high. I'm like, all right, cool. So if y'all both going to do the same thing, if you're both going to make rookie mistakes, I'd rather the 21-year-old than the 29-year-old. Just me.
Yeah.
Just me. If we're both going to come out here and do something stupid, at least give me the guy who, even if he does something stupid, he has the ability to maybe fix it. Or how about this? Learn from it and not do it again. I'm good. Like, he did something in the third quarter. Jimmy's yet to do in a Niner jersey. Look off a linebacker. He plays catch with Fred Warner. And you're not supposed to be playing catch with Fred Warner. He's on defense.
Like, wrong teammate.
That's not who he's supposed to. He got the pitch and catch thing down, but it's with the wrong person. Another story, another day. Thank you all for hanging with us. Don't forget to get over to the www.thefocustv.com. And as always, a reminder, Friday nights, 10 p.m., DCTV. You can also check it out if you're outside the city. DCTV.org. And then outside of Friday night at 10, like I said, get over to DCTV.org and you can find the other times that the show re-airs throughout the weekend, several other times. Y'all have a great night. And for those of you, you know, Mystics Outlook, see y'all in like, you know, 10, 12 minutes or so. That game just ended. Mystics beat the Spark 78-68.